It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
It's exciting to be joining you on our third season of the Live Greatly podcast. In case you're new to the show, I'm Crystal Bauer, a wellness expert on a mission to help you thrive personally and professionally. If you're ready to thrive, I invite you to subscribe and follow season three, because each week I'm sharing conversations with incredible individuals about life, wellness, and success. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
Fundamental piece of leadership that I think is the most important is creating a clear vision for where the business is going, what we're trying to do, getting people who are super passionate and talented about that, and then just letting them do it as best as possible and get out of their way.
I'm incredibly excited to have John Foraker here today, the co-founder and CEO of Once Upon a Farm. One of his co-founders is Jennifer Garner, and they are on a mission of providing the best organic, cold-pressed, nutrient-rich snacks for kids of all ages. John and I are going to be chatting about why organic is important, particularly for kids, what makes Once Upon a Farm unique. We're going to be chatting about his journey from being a CEO of Annie's, which was acquired by General Mills for $820 million back in 2014, to doing what he's doing now with Once Upon a Farm and how he met Jennifer Garner and why they decided this mission was worth pursuing. He's going to be sharing his take on leadership and what are the keys to successful leadership. He's also going to be sharing some of his biggest takeaways as a CEO and how he navigates the stress that comes with the pressure of being a leader in a company. We also are going to touch on John's take on a four-day work week and a lot more. Super excited about this. Let's jump into it and welcome John to the show. John, so happy to have you here. Thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm excited to be here. It'll be fun.
Yes. So to start, I really want to hear the backstory about how you got involved with Once Upon a Farm and how this all came to be. I'm such a big fan of the brand. So I'm really, really excited to dive into that with you today.
Well, thank you. It's a very improbable story, but here's the backstory. So I spent most of my career running a brand a lot of your listeners probably know called Annie's. I was there from about 1998, started running it full-time in 2003, and then ran that all the way up to about 2017. And that was one of the first organic brands in the United States and in really North America that kind of put organic in the center of the store and really made it a mainstream concept for kids and families. And so I sold that business to General Mills in 2014, but stayed there for 3 years to run it. And after I sold the business to Mills, I talked to them about investing in other businesses as long as they weren't competitive with them. And they were totally cool with that. And it had long been a thought of mine that no one had really done anything in fresh baby, which was amazing to me because through my work at Annie's and talking to lots of moms and dads, we knew that that first foods for babies was a real pain point. And a lot of consumers were trying to figure out what's the right thing. How do I do this? Do I have to make it myself? It's really hard, et cetera. And so I looked around and couldn't really find anybody doing it. And then one day a phone call came in from a longtime industry friend of mine named Greg Fleischman. He basically said, hey, I just came across this company in San Diego that's just starting doing what you're interested in, and you're not going to believe it. So I met Ari and Cassandra, the two founders. This was in early 2016. They just started it. And it was called Once Upon a Farm. They had just branded it that. And I became their biggest outside investor about 2 days later. So I was so new. And so, I helped them for a year or so, very small little business, but I was so busy with what I was doing at Annie's. And then in July of 2017, the phone rang and it was Ari. And he said, hey, Jennifer Garner's team has been in touch with us. They're really interested in this brand and what we're doing. And they saw that you're an investor and Jen and her team wanted to talk to you about why you're involved with it. Jen had been looking to do something in kid nutrition in early stage food for probably a decade, a long time. And something that aligned with her own personal work with Save the Children, which is all about helping kids in rural poverty. And she's just been a real passionate champion for that in the US for a long time. And so anyway, I set up a meeting. It was an hour meeting. I was a half hour late for it because I had a flat tire on the way to the airport. It was just a nightmare. It was like totally not meant to happen. You know what I mean? So we got in there and we just started talking, and we talked about the food industry. We talked about how hard it is to get kids the nutrition that they need. We talked about the challenges of doing that for everybody, not just wealthy zip codes, but, and it was really clear that there was a great chemistry, and kind of as we were going along, I was like, oh my gosh, like we should do something together. This is pretty amazing. And we kind of high-fived at the end and said, hey, if we can figure something out here to get involved together, why don't we do that? And I walked out of there going, oh my God, the trajectory of my life is now going to change. I did not expect that an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's how it started. So she and I came in, Ari and Cassandra, welcomed us in as co-founders. The business was tiny, based in San Diego. We came in late 17. And then I moved the headquarters up to Berkeley, where Annie's had been for a long time. And I had some staff up there that I was able to bring in. And it's just been a rocket ship ever since. It's been a crazy ride. Crazy ride.
Amazing. Wow. Well, it's such an incredible mission. And I know when our kids were young, now they're 7 and 11, but when they were babies, I remember like getting all the equipment to try and make our own baby food. And I was trying to do organic, and it was a lot of work. And there is that kind of big question of what's the best thing to do, and new moms, it can be so overwhelming. So I love that your brand is making it easier for parents to give their kids healthy nutrition, but I would love to hear a little bit about this nutrition angle. So I'm sure you know a lot about it with being in this business, but why is what you're doing so unique as far as giving kids the nutrition that they need and babies the nutrition that they need? And I know it's organic, right? And it's non-GMO, right? But I would love to hear your take on like, well, why is that important? You know, why should parents be making that a priority when they're feeding their kids?
Yeah. So I've been a huge advocate of organic for decades, really. And to me, it's so clear that giving, especially developing kids, their brains are developing, their future eating habits are developing, giving them access to food that doesn't have synthetic pesticides and chemicals and other things that don't need to be there is obviously the right choice. And so for me, that's a very, very important kind of foundational piece. But really, in the food industry, that's now become kind of table stakes. That's like, there's so many parents like us that understand that and really do try to feed their kids organic whenever they can. And organic has become much more accessible price point wise too. That's another big thing. Mm-hmm. So economically, but I think, you know, when I was at Annie's, like all of our business was mostly shelf stable. We did very little that we did really none that was like perishable. We did some frozen mm-hmm. things, but it was clear to me that there was an opportunity to just do more nutrition and in fresh product or fresh process with new technologies that allow you to hold on to the phytonutrients and the real color and the real nutrition that's there that you would get as if you picked up a piece of fresh fruit. It started to develop a few years ago. We use this process called HPP, which is high pressure pascalization is what it's really called. But mm-hmm. basically, it's like instead of heating food to get, to knock down bacteria and things like that, to give you a shelf life, which is what happens in a lot of food in the store. This uses pressure, and the pressure, we take the product and we put it in a chamber where water pressure goes to about the same pressure per square inch that you'd have at the deepest part of the ocean in the world. And that mm-hmm. knocks back any potential bad things, but gives you a shelf life, but it doesn't ever get over 40 degrees. And so you get this like really ripe, fresh taste and nutrition, which I think is really great. And then the other like foundational thing is if you look out there at the universe of kid food, all categories, it's just a mountain of sugar. Like it is unbelievable how much knowledge there is about how excess sugar is linked to so many bad things and bad outcomes later in life. And the idea that we would have foods made for kids and babies even that have added sugar in them which is not necessary. It's just disgusting, I think. And so when I saw like all those pieces together and the idea of fresh baby and fresh kid, it was like, how can we pull all those things together and build a brand that gives a nutritional promise to get after those things? it felt like a really great business opportunity, in addition to being the right thing to do for our kids' health. And yeah, we're super passionate about that. And Cassandra, who's the co-founder who formulated these products to solve her own problem, which like all great entrepreneurs do, you know, she's super into the nutrition and the right combinations of ingredients to really get the best benefit for health for these developing palates of our kids.
I love that. And I agree that added sugar, it can be hidden where a lot of parents probably don't even realize that it's there, right? But I feel like in a way it's like priming kids' palates to want that and to crave that and to expect that. So right, if they have these products that have the added sugar, then if they bite into a piece of fruit, it might not taste as sweet, you know? So it's right, just, it's concerning. Yeah. So I love that you guys, that's on your radar and you are working to try and make these things more accessible. I'm curious if you know how nutrients or how many of the nutrients stay active when it's going through that cold pressure. What is it? Cold pressure?
HPP.
HPP. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I know, like I've read different things about when produce sits for extended periods of time, the nutrient mm-hmm. levels and the vitamin levels can go down, and then heat, I know, can impact that. But I'm curious with what you're doing, how that impacts that if the nutrient levels then are higher.
Yeah. So we're doing a lot of research on that. And actually, if you go and like scan the world for research around high pressure and nutrition, you don't find a lot of like comprehensive studies. You find things like on this specific ingredient, this is what happens. So we're actually trying to pull together that research now, but intuitively we feel pretty confident and know that like heat really breaks down a lot of these things, right? And to have a process and a relatively short shelf life, you know, our shelf lives are generally like 30 to 60 days. So the product's not going to sit there forever. Yeah. So it's all fresh product right now. We have a line of products we're doing that we just introduced that are frozen, which are also great nutrition.
Oh, you, love it.
You can capture like peak of freshness frozen really well without heat. But we, It's all really, really short shelf life stuff. So we think that all the good stuff sticks as much as possible. There's obviously going to be some natural degradation, as there would be if it was a banana sitting on your counter, right? So
right. Okay, I love that. So then I'm curious, what do you do with that short shelf life? Like, how does that impact business? Yeah. Do you have a protocol in place? Like, is there some sort of system in place to deal with maybe if there's excess left after that shelf life is coming to an end? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So when you build a business that's based on a product that's sold into a perishable part of the store and it's relatively short shelf life, all the systems have to be different and really agile. And like, you have to run a really tight ship. So we're basically making product now that we know is going to sell through at retail very quickly.
Got it.
And so we're not sitting on a lot of inventory. The inventory we're sitting on is, you know, either fresh fruits and vegetables that are coming in the door or instant quick frozen fruits and vegetables that were flash frozen at the peak of freshness, right? And then we're making the stuff and it goes out literally almost that same day, like pretty close. So you have to just be really, really good. When I was running Annie's and or any business that makes shelf stable food that has a longer shelf, like a year or longer, you don't have to be as good. Because honestly, like it can sit in your warehouse for a couple months, not be you. Like, but you have to be really, really good. So it's not me. It's we built an incredible team of amazing people who really know how to do that well. And that's been both a growth opportunity for me to see that and to put it in place, but to just watch this team of pros do it. It's incredible.
So. I love it. Well, this is a great segue into talking a little bit about leadership, because as you said, like what you're doing, you have to be really good. And I'm curious, as the CEO, what do you think are the most important qualities of a leader in an organization? Because you're overseeing all these different things. So I was just curious, from your experience, what do you think are like the top skills that a leader should have to really have a company culture that's healthy and be able to put out a product that's profitable?
Yeah, well, so often, you know, when the concept of leadership is, it's very, there are core principles, obviously, but there's also very much like the personal touch. It's the element of the leader themselves. And like, what are they like? Like, to me, it being a leader is about authenticity. It's about being yourself always. It's about being a great listener, like really pausing and listening And most importantly, it's collecting and bringing together great people and just allowing them to unleash their greatness. Like, that to me is the fundamental piece of leadership that I think is the most important. It's creating a clear vision for where the business is going, what we're trying to do, getting people who are super passionate and talented about that, and then just letting them do it as best as possible and get out of their way. Like, yeah. I've been in doing this for many, many years, and I've learned early on, I think I was obviously very inexperienced and didn't really realize, but the whole adage of like, just surround yourself with people who are way smarter than you and who have skills that are way better than you in all these areas, and let them do their thing. And then encourage a culture and environment where they know that that's being rewarded and respected and valued. And it's important because of the mission that we're on together. Yeah. And then just trying to encourage their own personal development so that their own personal journey in life is very satisfying and they feel great about what they're doing. That to me is the job of a leader. Other than that, it's like, kind of stay out of the way.
I try to. Right. I think that's so important, and giving people autonomy to grow. And I love that you talked about the mission as well. I think it's so important for the organization to have a mission, but for that to tie into an employee's core values too. Yeah. So I love all of that. And I think, talking about getting out of people's way, like, what do you think about micromanaging? I think some leaders can struggle with that, especially if they run a smaller team, feeling mm-hmm. like you have to sign off on every little thing. So any tips for anyone listening who might find themselves being micromanagers, or they might find themselves being micromanaged?
Yeah. So, the level of like hands-onness depends a lot about the size of the enterprise. Like, so I was a lot more hands-on on a lot more things 3-4 years ago than I am today, because the organization has grown and we've been able to build the capabilities there. You know, people who micromanage oftentimes have seen that kind of leadership model to them, and that's the way they think it's done. Mm-hmm. And also there's a sense of control that comes with micromanaging too, right? I would encourage people who feel like they're being micromanaged to, in a very productive way, encourage a conversation around what I think I'm capable of doing. And mm-hmm. hey, you as my boss, you have lots of really important things on your plate. You know, I got this part. I'm going to free up some bandwidth for you to go focus on some other things. You know, check in with me, you know, build trust. That's the way to do it. And then for people who know they're micromanagers and are struggling with that, it is very counterproductive. If you have people who are working for you that need to be micromanaged constantly, that's the way that you get the best results. You may not have the right people, and you need to think about that. Like, you know, the right people definitely require guidance. They need to know where they're going. They want support. They want coaching.
Yeah. But
everyone wants to feel like they're contributing on their own and not having every comma checked every time. You know, mm-hmm. it's right. hard to retain great people when you do that.
Right. No, that's really great insight. And I would love to hear if you have any big life lessons that mm-hmm. you have learned personally throughout your journey as a CEO. I mean, you've mm-hmm. worked with Annie's, now you're with Once Upon a Farm, but any just like big things, that big takeaways that you've found throughout that journey?
Yeah. So a couple, the one core principle when I talk to other CEOs, and a lot of them have learned this too, or younger CEOs who are coming in, one piece of advice I give them is try to be level. Like, when you have something go amazingly great, like, try not to be dancing on the table and have it be like just try to control your highs, but also control your lows. You know, like, when you're an entrepreneur, you can in one day, and very often in one morning, you can have something amazing happen and something catastrophic.
Sure.
And the team you're working with is looking at that and they're saying, how should I react to that? And I think if you can be kind of level and kind of like always pretty predictable in terms of the where you're at on the good and the bad and pragmatic, I think people like that working environment, because no one likes working on a yo-yo, you know, where it's like highs and lows. That get the personal stress of that is very high. And it's also very tough on the CEO, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's that. And then the other thing for me, and this, this is definitely for me, maybe it's not for every CEO, but I need to carve out time to think. Like I think my best work strategically and just thoughtfully when I have time to just sit and think with, you know, it could be a walk. It could be a weekend, a morning. It could be between meetings. I need to allow time for that. And that's where my best results come from. The things that, at least my best contributions to our success in my past companies have come from that.
I love that. And I personally think that a lot of companies should institute that time for reflection and mm-hmm. those big ideas into the schedule instead of like back-to-back meetings. It's like make one of those meetings reflection time. Go for a walk and get creative ideas flowing, because I've talked with so many people who say very similar things. Like that's where a lot of the creativity comes. That's where problem solving comes, is when you have that downtime and that time to just get away and like step away, get a bigger perspective.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So another thing I would love to hear, John, is what do you do personally for your stress management? Because as you said, you know, one day there could be something amazing mm-hmm. that can happen. And then there's something that is really, you know, potentially catastrophic that can happen. How do you navigate that to support your well-being in this position where, you know, you have a lot of decisions to make and a lot of pressure?
I like to run. So,
okay, nice.
So I go on a run, and for me, that's thinking time, but it's also just, I've learned to kind of decompress that way. And so that to me is very helpful, but it goes back to like some quiet time where I can focus to really think through things. And also just like developing a network of people that I'm comfortable just talking to and really helping me think through things. If I'm facing kind of a significant mm-hmm. challenge personally or in the business or whatever, you know, I feel like I have people that I can call and just go like, hey, have you ever seen this issue before? Like, how should I be thinking about this? You know?
Yeah.
I think that's important too, as we think about, you know, as, you know, leaders, we think about the networks around us, people we respect and that we know we can trust to give us great advice, whether we want to hear it or not, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that sounds like all really great insight. I'm curious too, have you heard or read about this 4-day work week that people are talking about? And I would love if you have, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, like 4-day work week or for employees, like how to promote stress management for mm-hmm. employees, like all these different ideas popping up. I think with the pandemic that really got this more front and center on people's radar as far as trying to avoid burnout and all of that. Just curious what your take is on all that.
Yeah, I am a huge proponent of workplace flexibility, so much so that we kind of have a corporate headquarters now, but honestly, we don't. Like we have people, it's pretty much a remote first company now. We have people all over the country. And we did that in some ways out of necessity as we were small and growing really rapidly. And the pandemic hit, and obviously we couldn't like be traditional in terms of the way we co-located and were in the office. And so we just took the guardrails off and said, our goal is to hire the best, most amazing people ever, anywhere, and to have a really flexible work environment to allow things to get done. It's created a situation where we've been able to hire the most amazing talent. And by the way, just like so many moms and dads, we have so many kids under the age of 5 here in this company.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Who are really drawn to the mission and the work for like getting these great kids products out into grocery stores. But I think that, you know, when you really think of like talented people and individuals, the things that they value flexibility. They value the trust that a manager has in them to get their work done when they can get it done. And the idea of whether that's, you know, in a company wanting to say, hey, it's going to be 4 days and we're going to kind of work it in this last day is for you. That's great. And one way to do it. And the other way is just to allow the flexibility across the entire organization to do it. And it's working incredibly well for us. better than I ever would have thought it would. You know, I came from a more traditional environment where you had a corporate office, people came in, they did their commutes to get there. Yeah. I was open to the idea, and it's worked way better than I would have ever imagined. Now, I think there's, as this rolling experiment across the whole world happens, where companies are exploring different things, I think there is a balance necessary. You need to get people together enough, or have enough structure to for the organization to work. But it's really just finding that sweet spot for each company, I think. Mm-hmm.
I love that. Yeah. That's amazing. That flexibility is so important. I love that you're doing that. So we are coming closer to the end, but I want to hear, where can people find your products, and particularly the frozen products that you have? I'm curious what grocery store chains have that, or if people just order that from the website. Love to learn more about that.
Yeah. So Once Upon a Farm is in about 12,000 grocery stores in North America. So in the US and Canada, and most of what we do today are these fresh refrigerated products that are sold in either the kid dairy set. So if you think about where kid yogurt would be, our big retailers are like Target, Whole Foods, you know, Kroger, et cetera, and many independent natural stores. And then the frozen items are, and by the way, all these items are available online too at onceuponafarmorganics.com. And then the frozen items, we just introduced this last year, and they are now available in all Whole Foods stores in the frozen aisle, like right where the kid meals are. And these are like items that are made for moms and dads who want to have just a super quick preparation of like baby led weaning type products, like first finger foods. It's amazing stuff. Yeah.
I love it. What's the age range of food products you have for?
So people come into our brand when they start doing solid food. So like 7, 8, 9 months right in there. Okay. And then, but we, the majority of our business are baby kids, like ages 1 through 7, really.
Okay.
So they come in, and then we, you know, it's really kids snacking and things like that. And, you know, a pouch in the fridge, and they can run by and grab it. And mom and dad feel great about, hey, you can have that, as many of those snacks as you want. You know?
Yeah. I'm sure you have an adult here or there too, that like,
oh, we do. Yeah. No. we think it's like about 10 to 15% of the business are adults that love it too, because it's a great snack, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Easy, accessible. Yeah. Well, amazing. So I have a couple of questions for the wellness lightning round at the end. But before we go into that, John, anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, no. Thank you, Crystal. I appreciate the opportunity and time, and just all of our consumers out there or potential consumers, please give us a try and let us know what you think. We love doing this and love making an impact, but we couldn't do it without all of our awesome fans.
Love it. And I'm going to put links to all of Once Upon a Farm's website and all of your stuff, social, everything in the episode details.
Great.
So make it nice and easy. Okay. So a couple fun questions for you. So you are on a deserted desert island, John, and you can only bring 3 foods with you, and that's all you're going to be able to eat. You don't know how long you're going to be there. What 3 foods would you bring?
Oh my gosh. That is so hard, because I love to eat. I'm a big foodie. I would bring some Texas barbecue, because Texas barbecue. I would bring probably some Nixie sparkling water, organic flavored waters, which I'm addicted to. I'm a friend of the founder there. I'm not an investor or anything like that, but they're incredible.
What is it called?
Nixie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look into it.
Incredible brand. And then I probably would bring like Braeburn apples. I love apples.
Ooh, all right. Yum. I love it. And then the last question I have for you, John, is, knowing what you know today, what advice would you have given to yourself from 10 years ago?
10 years ago, I would tell myself that you don't have to be perfect. You know, you're going to have ups and downs, and take advantage of the opportunities that come to you. Like I said, I've been on a lifelong journey of learning how to navigate stress and success and failure and all that. And I've been on that journey. And so 10 years ago, I was still on that journey. So that's what my advice would be.
Great advice. Well, this has been amazing, John. Thank you so much for taking time with me today to share all of these insights with the world. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Crystal. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps this show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Now for a disclaimer. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified health professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions regarding your specific health, your sleep patterns, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions. Always consult your physician before taking any medications, any over-the-counter drugs, any supplements, vitamins, or herbs, and consult your physician before starting any new lifestyle programs. All information, views, and statements shared on the Live Greatly podcast are purely the opinions of the authors. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. They have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Opinions of guests are their own, and Crystal Bauer and this podcast do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. Neither Crystal Bauer nor this podcast takes any responsibility for possible health consequences of a person or persons following the information in this educational content. Always consult your physician for recommendations specific to you. If any product mentioned in this podcast has been received from the manufacturer or public relations team for that product with the express intent of editorial consideration, the product will be identified as such. A product for which Live Greatly receives some form of compensation for promoting will be identified as such.